Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're diving into, well, a real literary heavyweight, a book that's given us a word for that specific kind of modern dread. Franz Kafka's final and famously unfinished novel, The Castle, Das Schloss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've ever felt completely powerless trying to deal with some faceless administration, you kind of already know Kay's world.
It really is the definitive portrait of that bureaucratic anxiety, isn't it?
Oh.
And to really get it, you have to think about Kafka himself.
Right.
You know, a German-speaking Jew in Prague, part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which was fading at the time, his whole life felt marked by this sense of alienation, anxiety, even the boredom of his day job in insurance.
And he funneled all that personal stuff, that dread, into something universal.
Exactly. He transformed it.
Which brings us to that word we use all the time, Kafkaesque.
Yeah, people use it loosely.
They do. But here, in The Castle, what it really nails is this strange mix. You have this very realistic, detailed, almost like clinical way of describing things.
Very precise.
Which makes the world seem totally normal. But then, bam, it collides with these situations that are completely nightmarish, illogical, surreal.
And that collision, that's the heart of it. The Castle wasn't finished when Kafka died in 1924, published against his wishes in 26.
He wanted it burned, didn't he? Like most of his work.
He did. Thankfully, Max Brod didn't listen. But it became a cornerstone of modernism because it's this huge, profound allegory. It's not just about a guy, Kay, trying to get a job as a land surveyor.
No, it's much bigger.
It's about that universal human need for, well, validation or recognition.
Yeah.
Just wanting a legitimate place in the world, you know, and usually fighting against some kind of power that you can't even properly see or understand.
Okay, so let's set the scene for Kay. We meet him, and we only ever know him as Kay, arriving in this remote village. It's winter, everything's covered in snow.
Bleak.
Very bleak. And he claims he's been summoned there. He's the new land surveyor, called by this huge, mysterious castle that just looms over the whole place. Physically looms, but also, you know, psychologically.
And Kay arrives thinking, okay, this is pretty straightforward. I've been hired. It's a professional thing.
And a transaction.
Right. But the second he gets there, he basically falls down a rabbit hole. It's a total labyrinth. Mm-hmm. His quest stops being about the job almost immediately.
It becomes existential.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What he's really looking for isn't money or status in the usual sense. It's just confirmation. An affirmation that he is who he says he is, that he actually belongs there.
And the absurdity kicks in straight away, doesn't it? It traps you, the reader, right there with Kay. He makes this phone call to the castle.
Uh-huh.
And gets this really weird, ambiguous confirmation about his job. It's just enough to keep him going, but it actually raises way more questions than it answers.
It's like being told, yes, we were expecting someone, but maybe not you, maybe not now.
Exactly. Like winning the lottery, but they can't find the ticket stub.
That ambiguity is the castle's main weapon, really. It's physically there, up on the hill, but it's often hidden by fog, by snow. It represents absolute power, but a power that's fundamentally unknowable.
So it's not about clear rules or commands.
Not at all. It controls the village by keeping everyone guessing, by maintaining this constant destabilizing mystery.
Okay, so let's follow Kay's journey. It feels very circular, very frustrating. He's defined by this almost exhausting determination, doesn't he?
Relentless persistence. He keeps trying to apply logic, a city surveyor's logic, to this completely irrational world.
But that very persistence, that obsession with trying to solve the unsolvable, it kind of erodes him, doesn't it? It makes him colder, more calculating.
It does. His logic becomes his own trap. He just can't let go of the idea that if he pushes one more button, talks to one more person, finds the right connection,
this system will finally make sense.
Exactly. But the system is designed specifically not to make sense. It's designed to absorb reason and just nullify it.
And the proof just keeps piling up. He finally gets to see the village mayor.
All right, a key encounter.
And the mayor drops this bombshell. Kay's original appointment. It was basically a typo. An ancient clerical error from years ago that somehow got filed wrong and took on a life of its own in the system.
So his entire mission, his whole identity in this village is built on nothing. On an administrative mistake.
That's just classic Kafka, isn't it? The system just runs on its own momentum, completely separate from truth or purpose.
Totally. Once a piece of paper gets into the machine, it can create its own reality, regardless of the facts. It's an engine running on pure inertia.
Then there are his assistants, Arthur and Jeremiah.
Oh, yes, the assistants. They just appear out of nowhere.
Suddenly. And they're identical. They're clumsy. totally useless as surveyors, you start to wonder if they're actually spies from the castle sent to hinder him.
They could be. They really embody that ambiguity because, on one hand, their presence seems to confirm Kay has some official status. The castle sent him help, right?
Yeah, proof.
But on the other hand, their sheer incompetence just completely undermines any authority he might have. It's like delegated chaos.
They confirm the chain of command exists, but show how broken it is.
Precisely.
And meanwhile, Kay's personal life gets totally tangled up in this quest. He very quickly starts a relationship with Frida.
Mm-hmm. The barmaid from the Herrenhof Inn.
Who used to be the mistress of a very high-up castle official, Clem. And Kay rushes into this. Why? Because he sees her purely as a tool.
Yeah, it's very instrumental. She's his one potential link, his only tangible connection, maybe, to the power structure he's trying to penetrate.
So it's completely transactional from his side.
It is. And that just poisons any real chance they have.
Mm.
Frida seems to offer him a moment of actual belonging, maybe even love.
But he can't separate it.
He can't. His personal life is just another front in his campaign against the castle. Any warmth gets filtered through that obsessive ambition.
And this obsession leads him to accept this really humiliating demotion, right?
Yes, a major compromise. He gets offered the job of school janitor.
From land surveyor to janitor.
A huge step down. And he takes it. It forces him and Frida into pretty miserable, squalid conditions. It's like the system says, okay, we won't give you the recognition you want, but we will offer you degradation.
And accept it, you will.
And accept it, he does. Mm-hmm. All the while, the ultimate authority figure, this Clam, he remains completely elusive.
Almost a ghost.
He really is. Clam is probably the most important figure connected to the castle, but Kay only ever catches one brief, indistinct glimpse of him. From a distance.
He embodies that inaccessible power.
Perfectly. And what's fascinating is how Clam seems to change depending on who's talking about him. His appearance, his significance, it shifts based on the villager's perspective.
So he's whatever the system or the villager's fear needs him to be at that moment.
Exactly. He's a projection screen for power.
Okay, so if the main authority figures like Clam are so distant, so ambiguous, how does the castle actually maintain its grip on the village? It feels absolute.
Ah, that's where Kafka gives us this brilliant, chilling subplot. It shifts the focus from Kay's individual struggle to the social mechanics of control. It's the story of the Barnabas family.
Right, Olga and Amalia.
Olga tells Kay the story. Years ago, her sister Amalia received this crude, insulting summons from a castle official named Sortini, basically demanding sexual favors.
And Amalia.
She refused.
Yeah.
In a single powerful act of defiance, she just tore the letter up. Refused to submit to that degradation.
Brave, but with consequences.
Devastating consequences, not directly from the castle, not with soldiers or anything. Instead, the family faced complete social and economic ruin.
Inflicted by the villagers themselves.
Yes, they were totally ostracized, shunned by everyone. The villagers, terrified of being associated with Amalia's defiance, enforced the punishment for the castle.
Wow, so the power isn't just top-down force. It's maintained by collective guilt, fear, social pressure.
It's the castle's real masterpiece. Self-policing through fear. And the underlying principle, as the book makes clear, is that within the castle's world, the possibility of error is simply not taken into account.
Meaning, if the system even implies you're wrong, you are. No appeal.
Guilt by association, or even just by being noticed by the authorities in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And the community enforces your isolation. It's terrifyingly effective.
And that kind of pervasive fear, that pressure, it ultimately destroys Kay's personal life too, doesn't it?
It does. Frida eventually leaves him. She goes off with Jeremiah, one of those useless assistants.
Why Jeremiah?
Because she finally realizes Kay's obsession, his abstract quest, makes any kind of normal, stable life with him impossible. He sacrificed their relationship for this intangible goal.
The human cost of his quest becomes unavoidable.
Absolutely. He gave up the only real anchor he found for the sake of
what?
An illusion of progress towards an unreachable castle.
And the novel just stops. Famously, it ends mid-sentence. Kay is still wandering this maze, no closer to the castle, no closer to any real answers.
It's one of the most famously unfinished works in literature. But we do have a hint from Max Brod, Kafka's friend and executor.
Oh, right. Brod mentioned what Kafka had planned.
Sort of. Brod claimed Kafka told him the intended ending was that Kay, utterly exhausted, would finally die. And on his deathbed,
yes,
a message would arrive from the castle, granting him permission to live in the village.
The irony.
The ultimate bureaucratic punchline. The system finally grants the validation he sought, but only at the precise moment it becomes completely meaningless. Too little, far too late.
So when we pull all these threads together, the bureaucracy, case quest, the village dynamics, what are the core themes that you really need to take away from the castle?
Well, first and foremost, I think, is the crushing absurdity of bureaucracy itself. The castle isn't just inefficient, it's a system that seems to exist for its own sake.
Right, it maintains power through mystery and confusion, not through actually governing effectively.
Exactly. It's opaque, inaccessible, self-perpetuating, and fundamentally indifferent to the human lives caught in its gears.
And that indifference leads straight to the second major theme, alienation, Kay's desperate, futile search. It really speaks to that universal human need for meaning, for belonging, for simple recognition in a world that often feels vast and indifferent.
He needs the system to tell him who he is, to give him an identity. And its refusal, its silence, creates this profound spiritual emptiness, this crisis.
Which sets up the power dynamic.
Perfectly. Power is absolute here because it's invisible, unexplained.
Yeah.
You can't fight what you can't see or understand, so the individual is left completely powerless.
There's that devastating quote that sums up Kay's position, isn't there? One of the villagers tells him.
Oh, yes. It's brutal. You're not from the castle, you're not from the village, you aren't anything.
Just nothing.
Unfortunately, though, you are something, namely a Tranger, one who isn't wanted and is in the way everywhere. That just perfectly captures his total alienation, his identity crisis. He exists, but has no place.
And the way Kafka writes it is key, that style. He uses that tight, third-person limited viewpoint, so you, the reader, are trapped right inside Kay's head. You feel his frustration, his
You
claustrophobia.
really do. And the language itself, it's so precise, so lucid, almost like a legal document sometimes.
Describing utter madness.
Exactly. That contrast between the calm, methodical prose and the illogical, nightmarish events.
Yeah.
That's what creates that signature Kafkaesque feeling, that sense of normalized abnormality. That's so disturbing.
And the symbolism is so potent too, the castle itself. People read it in so many
Oh,
ways.
endlessly. Is it the state? Totalitarianism? Is it divine grace? Something spiritual but unreachable? Or maybe just the realm of meaning itself that we strive for but can never quite grasp.
And the snow, all that snow burying the village.
It just screams isolation, obscurity, the coldness Kay faces, both literally and emotionally. It muffles everything, makes everything harder to see, harder to reach.
You know, reading it now, almost a century later, it feels unnervingly relevant, prophetically so, maybe.
Doesn't it? We're all Kay sometimes, stuck in digital queues, trying to get answers from automated systems, dealing with opaque online portals or corporate structures that feel designed to deflect, not to help.
The castle isn't necessarily a building on a hill anymore.
No, maybe it's the impenetrable algorithm, the cloud server you can't access, the terms and conditions nobody reads. It forces you to confront that really uncomfortable possibility.
That maybe our search for meaning, for validation from these vast systems, maybe it's fundamentally irrational.
Maybe the systems themselves aren't designed for meaning, only for process. And our human need just doesn't compute. It's a deeply unsettling thought that the castle leaves you with.
A truly profound and enduring work.
It stays with you long after you finish that final broken sentence.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.